the end of the day, anyone who's built a home, anyone who's lived in a home, if you don't come out of the ground right, your house isn't going to be right.
Welcome to the System Build Lifestyle, a special Art of Construction series dedicated to the growing world of off-site construction. Host Devin Tilley, owner of Mountain View Window and Door and founder of the Art of Construction, alongside Audrey Kubesek of Modular SureSite and Connect Home Builders, take listeners on a deep dive through this fascinating subject. Off-site construction techniques are changing the industry. Keep following the System Build Lifestyle series so you don't get left behind.
All right, Audrey, here we go. System Build Lifestyle, Episode 1. We're going to dive in and have a fireside chat with Pat McMahon, who is the leader of AMVIC out of Canada and the Western U.S. Territory Manager, Trevor Brown. Audrey, here we are. We're doing this thing.
I love it. I'm very excited. I love having an opportunity to explore a whole different lifestyle.
And from being a guest on The Art of Construction to where it was just such a story that we had to tell.
Absolutely. And I love that we have started this show with the foundation, right? Starting it from the ground up.
Awesome. So episode one, here we go. All right, we're going to dive in and have the speed round starting with Pat and then with Trevor. What do you say, Audrey?
Live your best lifestyle.
All right. What's your favorite beverage?
I'm a whiskey guy. Say Crown Royal.
All right, nice. Tell us about the favorite place you've traveled.
I'm a pretty domestic guy. I'd say my favorite place I would say the Bay Area. I love the San Francisco and the whole Bay Area there. I like hanging out there.
Well, timing is everything. My wife and I are going there next weekend on a weekend away after I'm doing a conference for a window dealer out of Oakland, and she's coming and spending the weekend there. So what's the one thing we got to do in San Francisco?
That's easy. Slam dunk. You got to go have breakfast at the Buena Vista down on the wharf. It's exactly the way it was 1940. The bartenders will serve up the best Irish coffee you've ever had in your life with handmade whipped cream. They perform magic tricks while they're making the drinks for you, and they've got a great crab cake Benedict that you got to try.
Next weekend's going to be good. Tell us your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction arena.
A lot of time with my kids. We like going out on our boat and spending time on the lake. We do a lot of camping, a lot of outdoor activities like that. I have an 18-year-old daughter and a 13-year-old son. We spend a lot of time driving around doing fishing tournaments and camping and stuff like that.
Awesome. So we got to know a little bit about Trevor Brown, who is confident enough to come into Studio SBL with his boss, Pat McMahon. Pat, what's your favorite beverage?
A Cab Sauv wine.
Is there any certain one?
Pedersen. You can find it in the Hunter Valley in New South Wales, Australia.
Awesome. Tell us your favorite place you've traveled.
A lot of places I've liked. Probably Sydney, Australia, if I was going to pick a site. It'd be one of the cities that I'd recommend everyone has to see.
And tell us your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction arena.
Probably ice hockey.
Hockey. Canada, we're big into hockey, right?
So we are.
Me coming out to Colorado from Fargo, North Dakota, it's very close. My 18th birthday, I told my parents we were going to this concert, and it really was to go to Winnipeg. And it was this weekend concert, and it was 18 to do all the adult stuff. So it was a fun weekend in Canada, and I learned what it was all about to live the out-of-the-house lifestyle for one weekend. So I remember that. That was a fun weekend.
I remember going down to Fargo and playing against the Bison. So, I had a chance to play in Fargo, North Dakota. So played in Grand Forks, North Dakota. With the Sioux, we played against them. So we had a lot of time traveling around North Dakota playing some ice hockey.
Well, awesome. Well, we definitely are going to connect then well. So we're super excited to have you guys in here and tell us your story on our first show that we're so excited to be launching this podcast. Tell us about your company, AMVIC, and what your roles are with the company in the insulated concrete form industry, because it's all about starting with a good foundation on what we do here.
Well, AMVIC started in 1998, and the founder of the company, his name is Victor Ahmed. Victor's a PEng with a PhD in building sciences, and he immigrated to Canada from Russia. And when he got into Canada, when he was looking for a home, Eastern Europe, the Russian, the European marketplace, a great percentage of the housing that they build are built out of concrete. And so one of the challenges he was having was trying to find a concrete home. And he ended up buying a wood-framed home, like you would find in North America anywhere. And he decided that he would like to sort of facilitate product design and create different products that would encourage the use of concrete in building a home. And as a company, our core competency would be design. Really, we're an innovative company. We design lots of products, and we really are well in tune to the construction market, the homeowner market, the commercial market, and we like to understand people's problems, and Victor's been very good at being able to design built on those products for solutions going forward. So when you look at our company, that's how we started. Today, we're a large manufacturer of expanded polystyrene. The only reason we became a manufacturer is that we really couldn't find a manufacturing partner that would manufacture the kind of quality. And so one of the real benefits of a company like Anvik, when you design your own product, you're very much aware of the quality of that product going out the door. And so you build your whole company based upon consumer acceptance of what you've designed. So as a company, that's where we started our roots. And if you take a look at all our products, they're all expanded polystyrene from a perspective of material we use, but they're all really built around improve how you build, improve the performance, improve the strength. And that's really the host of our product lines that we have. My role in the company is anything that would touch the customer. So sales, marketing, customer service, shipping, anything from a customer relations perspective, I manage. And it's been great. We've had such a tremendous run, great growth. We're seeing so many trade winds that are pushing our industry right now to improve. And I couldn't agree with you more. At the end of the day, anyone who's built a home, anyone who's lived in a home, if you don't come out of the ground right, your house isn't going to be right. So coming out of the ground right is really important.
And you've traveled all the way from?
I'm out of Toronto, Canada.
Toronto, Canada, to our studios here in Denver, Colorado. So thank you for taking the time and coming today. And with you in the studio, we have Trevor. What's your role with the company?
I'm the Western U.S. Territory Manager, so we've referred ourselves more as the boots on the ground for the company out here, working directly with everybody from our distributor partners that we have that distribute our product out here, down to the actual contractors that are installing it. We spend time in the hole down there building foundations and showing them how to do it. We also conduct a lot of our training and certification classes, which is a big part of any new innovative industry is education and educating the people how to use our product correctly and then all the benefits of it. So.
What was the reason, or what is one of the reasons why you were attracted to this company? Personally, what was the effort behind it?
For myself, it was, I guess it all started with a change in my career.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happened, I started trying to evaluate, at that stage of my life, I would have been late 40s, what was really important to me. And I think the first and foremost thing was people. And so in my career, I find I like working with people that I have a high respect with. They're trustworthy. They're a good heart. At the end of the day, whatever they're doing is to really add an improvement. And so when I met with Victor, we had some synergy. We both saw a lot of things. And the other thing I liked about with Victor is that we brought really two different skills. I mean, Victor's English, his understanding of our market is pretty limited. My ability as an engineer designer product is really not strong. So we had a really nice marriage of complementing strengths. And I'd never been in building material before. I'd never been to construction before. And so I also have always enjoyed learning. And so I thought, you know what, it's kind of cool. 49, I'm going to learn a whole new industry, whole new sector. I'm going to get really out of my comfort zone. And in many ways, it's been interesting in this particular career because the challenges I had to go through in making this career transition, I see every day in the industry I'm in today. So how does this industry do transition? How does it make change from A to B? And when I take a look at what I went through here, it's been helpful because it adds patience. It creates some empathy, some understanding. So it's been really helpful, this whole change in actually what I'm doing now, making the change in this business. So. Yeah.
And what sector did you work in before the construction arena?
Technology. I was a graduate right into the world of Xerox and IBM. And, I always joke, I could walk into a large national bank, sit down with a CIO and a CFO, and we could put together a $50 million technology transaction, and we could have the decision done within about 90 days. Boy, to have a builder change from going from a pour-in-place foundation to an ICF foundation, I got some that I've been working on for 9 years. So,
there is the tee up. So let's go all the way up to the 100,000 foot view. And for our listening audience, let's build a foundation how it can be done different ways. So on our sister station, The Art of Construction, we talk about crusty contractor a lot. And I sometimes may be a little bit pushy on how I live, but so be it, right? So I am all about innovation and change to say, tell us about how foundations are majority done today, and then let's talk about alternative ways to do foundations.
I think that's why you and I get along, because I think we're a lot the same that way. I love the crusty contractor comments from your previous episodes I've listened to. I thought were awesome because I feel the same way. We definitely start out, as myself, a little on my background, started off in the business pretty much as a kid in the lumber yard and worked my way into building and stuff. And so I've kind of watched how it's happened in the last 20 years and seen how it started. But, you know, 20 years ago, the way you would have started off is with a footing. You know, you dig your hole, obviously. And the first thing you've got to do to start your great foundation is going to be a good solid footing. When you put the footing down, now you've got a choice of how you're going to build what we call the stem wall or the foundation wall of the building. At that point, that's where Crusty Builder comes back, and he probably puts up he's going to put up wood forms usually. He's going to bring in an oil-soaked, diesel-soaked wood form that he's going to put up for whatever size he needs. He's going to tack them all up. He's going to pour concrete inside of them. He's going to let them set up. His crew's going to come back in a few days later. They're going to come back. They're going to peel the forms off, and then you're going to have your seal plate that's going to go on there, and then you're going to build up from there. We don't see here as much. I know you've got a large listing base, so in some of the places I know back east and stuff, you do see the CMU building as an option for your foundation. We really don't.
What is CMU?
I'm sorry, the concrete masonry units, basically cinder okay. blocks that you see. You know, I think you've probably seen more on Pinterest than anything. How to make shelves or something.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe their best use. But they, in a lot of buildings, you'll see a lot of commercial buildings that build out of CMU, which is they're basically the cinder blocks with holes in them.
I know what
they'll stack them up, and then they'll pour mortar mix inside of that with the rebar and different things to give it a structural quality. I haven't seen a CMU foundation built in a long time. We do see them in construction. You'll see them built for construction or commercial buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another option that could be out there in certain areas that, you know, people live in. And then obviously the best way to build that foundation would be to use a insulated concrete form. So it's, you know, using EPS, using styrofoam on two sides, usually in
EPS
most
is
expanded polystyrene. So usually you're going to be, on average, you know, there's variances with brands, but it's going to be 2.5 inches on either side. It's going to be connected by a web that's usually going to be a polypropylene web inside. It's going to hold it together. The best way to explain without having a picture in front of you would be a large 4-foot-long, 16-inch tall white styrofoam Lego. It's no different than when you're a kid stacking up and building your Lego house that you're going to put your little Lego people in. We basically lock them together. They go around with a foundation. We go a couple stacks high, maybe 2 or 3 high, depending upon the measurement we're trying to get for our foundation wall. We pour our foundation, you know, our concrete inside of that. Rebar obviously would go inside of that, and then we're going to pour concrete inside of that, finish it off, and we're right back where we would have been with some of the other foundations to build a stick frame on top.
And the form is also the foam that stays there now as an insulation thing instead of all the work of setting it and taking
Correct.
Them away.
Yeah, you're done. You don't have to come back and peel the forms off. The forms stay there. They're going to stay in place. They're also, you know, you'll hear people refer to them as a stay-in-place form also.
Uh-huh.
They stay in place. And a big thing that we're seeing now with the energy, you know, the energy codes and things are coming out is a lot of people they're insulating the foundation so that you have a good conditioned space inside of your foundation underneath the house and your floors. So a lot of guys are coming back in. So it's not just the one trip of taking off your foundation forms. You've got to pull the forms off, and then somebody's going to put some foam on that to insulate it to give you a conditioned airspace. In some places, we don't have to do that with an ICF. It's already there for you.
And the webs are holding it all together as a nice structure versus trying to fasten that foam to concrete.
It's already, yeah, it's embedded into the concrete at that point. So, I mean, it's going to hold because it's embedded through the concrete.
A lot of people would refer to an ICF form as a five-in-one product. So what the form will provide you is a vapor barrier. It provides you an air barrier. It's your structural component of your wall. It provides the insulation value. And not only does the polypropylene web act as a tie, it actually, it's like a mini I-beam built right within it. So wherever that flange comes out on the close to the outside of the form, it now becomes your studding. So when you use an ICF form, you're getting all five components in one place. So when you look at it, it's quick. You get a lot done just by stacking one form. And when we take a look at where the industry is going, air tightness is becoming more important. So it's nice to have that capability to provide that in one shot. And the insulation value is just growing everywhere. So it's nice to have a form that provides so much insulation. But what I would really add, I think a lot of people, when they talk about the ICF wall versus a pour-in-place wall, one of the things to really understand is how concrete itself cures. So concrete has its curing life, and that's when it actually becomes hard and it gets its strength. Concrete cures perfectly in 72-degree temperature. So when you're looking at a pour-in-place form, you're pouring that wall, then you're going to deal with daytime temperatures and nighttime temperatures. So you have all these fluctuations. So if I went to a pour-in-place basement and I took a look at that wall, I'm going to find a wall that's pretty coarse, really. You might even find the aggregate. You can actually see it. So it's the whole curing process. When I look at ICF, because of the insulation of the form itself, it's staying at 72 degrees day, night, doesn't matter. We still have the same perfect curing environment all the way through. So now what ends up happening, you end up with a wall, and you talked about high school earlier. So go back to a high school floor that was concrete, and you saw that matte finish, how dense it was. Mm-hmm. Well, this is going to be your wall in an ICF. So now you have a superior wall. It's a stronger wall. It's going to perform better from any kind of moisture management long term. So it's a much better wall.
So below the foundation from an ICF, are you doing anything differently than you would for a conventional pour in place?
No.
Same bedding, same kind of process.
Same footing, same process, same dowel placements. All of that would be the same.
Awesome. So we've kind of built it up to where the foundation, and you guys, correct me if I'm wrong, with ICFs and your brand of Amvic, you guys can keep going past just the foundation. You don't need to just put your bottom plate and build a wall, right?
No, you can go up. We have in North America, the tallest building that I'm aware of is a 21-story. It's a load-bearing ICF structure. In Europe, it's even higher. I believe we have one in Russia out of Moscow that's 24 stories high. So you can go up if you want to go up with the product.
So if you go up with an ICF, you don't have a wall that you can just drill and run your wires through. Tell us the process that's a little bit different if you're doing a ICF wall versus a stick-framed wall.
It's actually, and it's probably our most common question as we go either plumbing or electrical. Everybody wants to know how the utilities are run, and it's actually way easier than it is in a stick-frame wall. So we run the wire right into the EPS, so right into the styrofoam. We don't require any kind of conduit or anything. Commonly in my territories, you're going to have one of two options. You're either going to use a hot knife, which is just a heated blade that goes right in and cuts a little line in there, a groove to put the wire into, and then you use that same hot knife to cut out the boxes for your light switches or your outlets. That's the cleanest way to do it, but it's also a little bit slower. Personally, when I was building, and most of the guys I know, they'll actually just use an electric chainsaw. They put a little piece of all thread through the end of it to keep for the chain from hitting the concrete, and they basically run a 2-inch deep groove as fast as you can walk, because a chainsaw will cut super fat and you're not waiting for it to melt. So as fast as you can walk, you can run wire. It's a little messier. You get look like a little snowstorm blowing around in there when you're done, but the electricians love it because, I mean, it's just like I said, as fast as you can walk, you can put it in there, and you're just poking wire in with a carpenter pencil usually and getting it in there. You still like to use a hot knife to make the boxes, to cut the boxes out, because you can have a specific size of wire to a single gang, double gang, quad, whatever you need to cut out. But super, super fast. Plumbing, a little bit different, but in honestly, it's funny because it's the biggest question we get, but it's honestly probably the biggest non-issue because, as most of the construction people will know, if you design the house correctly, you shouldn't have very much plumbing on your exterior walls, especially in a in an area where we have freeze issues. It's just not a good design. If you're designing with plumbing on your exterior walls, it can freeze in a stick frame house, let alone on, you know. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times that comes up, but it's a very non-issue for us in most cases. But if it ever does get to a point where we need some of that done, a lot of it's just pre-planning. One, you've got 2.5 inches of foam to take out of there, plus another 1/2 inch of sheetrock or whatever. You know, worst case, if we need to put a 4-inch pipe in there or something, we cut a groove where we're going to have the pipe in the wall. We push it back in, we re-glue it, and then the concrete pours. We're going to cut the foam back out, and we just have a spot where the pipe's going to go. If we need to go through the wall, we do it before the concrete's poured. You know, it's all about planning. You got to think through. You know where everything's going to be before you start building the house. You know where the hose bibs are going to be. You know where your power needs to come in or whatever it is, or an outlet needs to be on the outside. You just go through and plan it out correctly. And when you do that, you do it through the foam before, then the concrete gets poured in and you've got a sleeve through it. So it's just planning, thinking ahead.
You know, one thing, 3 points Trevor's brought up that I really like. He made the reference of Lego. He made the reference of the extrusions going through the wall and then planning the electrical outlets. And out of all that, when I take a look at all of that, if I want to build on that theme, this is, you know, one of the things you need to be really aware of when you're doing the ICF. This is a finished wall, and pre-planning is absolutely critical. Pre-planning is absolutely necessary. You need to understand where these extrusions are going to be. You have to plan for it. You need to have a good sense of your electrical grid so you can plan for that. You need to be prepared on the site. So it's a really important component when you're working with ICF. And though it's like Lego, once it's poured and your steel's in it, it's not that forgiving. So that pre-planning is a really critical stage.
Awesome.
So let me ask you this. I'm just curious. When you are doing a foundation, let's just say you have a 9-foot foundation and you have a walkout basement that has windows and doors, how does that work?
We're going to usually, your windows and doors are going to be what we call window buck. You're going to put a window buck in there that's going to be dependent upon each contractor can choose. That's another thing, talking about different options that mm-hmm. you have within the ICF industry. We make a product that is an EPS and polypropylene piece that basically you just make a square box, if you will, that slips into the hole that will block the concrete out, so you can then put your windows into that with a that has attachment points, 1.5-2 inch attachment points on the outsides of the wall, so when you slide your flanges in from your window, you can screw into those and attach them through there. Some guys still use wood buck is probably, you know, back when I was doing it, that was what we all did. We just built wood window bucks and put them in the hole, and mm-hmm. then we slid them in. It continues to be a very popular, probably the most out here, probably the most popular option is a wood buck, and they, you know, kind of gets them back to what they're used to, a wood attachment point. So we'll put those in there. In a basement situation, obviously, if you have a 4040 window, you're going to put a 4040 buck in there and be ready for that. But in a daylight or a walkout basement, sometimes it just depends. You have the option to go in what we call a four-sided structure on that, and then actually putting in a large window buck, almost like you would if you imagine a garage door mm-hmm. or something, and we'll brace those up and put a large, an oversized giant buck in there, I guess. Or you have the option of just capping the walls as a three-sided structure and then stick framing in between, if you're going to have a very small space that will be your header for your windows and stuff there, because you've got a lot of sliders or accordion windows or whatever, you've got going on that area, then sometimes people just put a large beam across there, which another great thing about ICF, really easy to just cut a beam pocket into each side and slide a large beam right in there and drop it to attach to there and also carry the weight of the upper floor. So
we've been talking a lot off air as all of these natural disasters that are happening, from hurricanes and all these fires and all this kind of flooding and all this stuff. Tell us kind of maybe the environmental benefits that would come from an ICF versus a stick frame, just different ways of thinking when it comes to, if it's a fire, does it maybe hold up, maybe stand a little bit longer, things like that?
Yeah, the ICF form from, dealing with climatic challenges we're going through is ideal. All the ICF will have a 3-hour burn rating. So all of us have tested our forms, and we've gone through that process. And in fact, it's probably greater than 3 hours, because I think most of the companies in this business stop the test. So after 3 hours, I guess if you're still in the building, it's still burning. I don't know, you
better run
challenges.
Fast.
Yeah, you got other things you got to worry about. So you know, but we ran it. So you end up with this wall that's got a 3 hour burn rate on the test. So I mean, it's great in terms of like a fire. And you know, we look at if we're talking about just some of the disaster we're going through. I mean, it's pretty hard not to talk about California and what they're going through. And you know, you take a look at those wildfires; they burn quick. You know, it's not a, it doesn't sit there a long time. They move quick. And so 3 hours is great. Those homes in ICF are going to stand up. A concrete home is going to stand up in that environment. It's going to withstand that. You may lose the outside of your insulation value. If it was stucco, that might have to be replaced. But the home itself, the integrity of the home, it's great. From wind load perspective, amazing. So if you're looking in any kind of Midwest environment where you're dealing with tornadoes or if you're on any of the coastal areas, particularly East Coast, we've got high wind loads coming off. The wind load capability is fantastic with an ICF. And when you take a look at even what we're seeing in the marketplace, ICF is really growing in popularity right now, particularly around the Carolinas. And the big driving force in that market is really wind management. And as those state legislations are putting in more code requirements of making sure that you have a structure that can handle a lot of wind stress, ICF is a really, really good product from that perspective. It makes sense. You know, if I looked at the climate conditions, this just makes sense.
There's another condition we should probably talk about, money. and that's the part that as I live the real world of I am sold on ICFs. I love it, the technology. But the word I like to use in my day-to-day owning my window and door company is what's the best value? And when you put all that stuff, you know, the benefits of a three-hour burn, the wind rates, all that stuff is one segment of that. Could you, for our listening audience, could you kind of paint the picture of how Crusty Contractor's been doing it like this for so long with what we're talking about here going forward? Could you paint a picture on kind of a cost matrix and not like exact, but kind of build what the cost ratios would be on that?
That's a very challenging question. Cost and value are two different concepts. So understanding the value, I think you can sell the value of a structure just in terms of its operational efficiency you gain from the structure, from the safety you gain from the structure, but even from the comfort. You know, I think one of the things you'll find with people that are living in ICF homes today, they'll tell you, the first word you're going to hear them say, it's so comfortable. And, you know, you look at ICF, you're pouring concrete, it's monolithical, so you're controlling all that air quality. So you'll walk into that home or that office, and the first thing you're going to realize is it smells good. You know, just from the air quality perspective of managing that is terrific. When you take a look at the sound capability of an ICF wall, it's fantastic. A typical stick frame home, SDC rating is going to fall between 24 to 28. ICF home, you're going to reach levels of 48 to 52. A movie theater, a Regal movie theater you go into, you're going to see those walls are going to perform 68 to 72. So, you know, that home is phenomenal. So you walk in there, the comfort is great. So now you got to put value statements to all these things. Well, if you have anyone in your family that's got any kind of asthma, the value states for itself really quickly. If you are if you're going into retirement and you've got a fixed income for the next 20 years, you're concerned about your operating expenses long term. If I can draw, you know, 60% of my operating costs of heating and cooling my home, there's great value in this. So value really becomes a difficult conversation because you've got to really understand the audience you're talking to, the climate you're talking to. So that part is difficult. Now, you went to another part of that question, part two, and after value, you asked me, and I already forgot.
Price.
But the Crusty Contractor.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, Crusty Contractor. So whole different, really, conversation, because now we're dealing with what your earlier question asked me, the transitional change I'm seeing in my career and what's happening in this industry. Well, Crusty Contractor is really a big part of that. So change is difficult. You know, you take a look at the trade environment, a lot of the trades we deal with today, it's almost a family industry. Dad did it, grandpa did it, and the kids are now doing it, and my kids are going to do it. And so you learn, and you believe what you learned. I mean, you trust it.
Right.
You trust it because you know you can get it done in the time frame you've committed. You trust it because I know I can build that way, and I'm going to meet my cost. So as soon as you're dealing with, let's change how you build, this is a scary proposition. Now I have to rethink my whole process. Can I get it done even in time?
And that's really where the whole story behind system builds comes in, because from Modular SureSite, from my company and my perspective of site work, I actually have the niche of working with modular builders and changing the whole dialect or the whole dialogue about either building it in the factory or building it on the lot, right? Or you know, sticks and bricks. So it does change, and it is a conversation. And I feel like Devin and I have had this conversation many times about how building is definitely changing. We've got to start looking at other ways. We've got to look at more efficient products, more green products. I think that's what is so interesting about insulated concrete forms is that, you know, a lot of people have this connotation of modulars are mobile homes like from 1950. It's the same conversation that we're having with insulated concrete forms is that people thought it was like from the 1990s or the 80s or that kind of thing. And so it's interesting, even the conversations that I have with builders today, a lot of them are very intrigued by the product. I think the R value is a big dynamic because there's a lot of neighborhoods that are expecting, they're transitioning, they're trying to get things more green, they're trying to get more on that level of having more home efficiency. So it is interesting to have a new product where it's not really a new product, it's just a better product.
You know, and I like how you're phrasing that, because we've used the word crusty contractor, and it sounds like it's a common term you've had in your show before.
Yeah.
but I want to go back to that because, you know, what you just talked about the builder, as much as there's a fear factor of change, there's a real openness at the builder mentality to understand.
I think so,
so
too.
So, you know, there's a real desire to want to, and it really comes down to fear. At the end of the day, I think most builders today, they want to build the best quality product they can.
No doubt.
They want to deliver a home product that is going to be able to perform or outperform and has a huge long-term benefit from a life cycle product. They want that. So it comes down to the fear. And so when we take a look at going to a modular home, or we do a panelization home or ICF home, mm-hmm. it's really how do we help the contractor manage all this fear? And a lot of the fear comes down, how do I price this out?
Right.
Where do I find the subtrades to do this? Will the consumer pay for it, even if it's 10% more? Do the consumers buy into the value of this? What do I have to learn? How does it change what I deal with my own trade workers? Maybe my only employee in my company is my framer. What do I do with my framer if I'm moving to a concrete home from a wood-based home? So all of these are such really big questions. And then at the end of the day, you're talking about my livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of these changes that we're talking about, this is my livelihood. If I don't do this well, it's my livelihood. It's my wife. It's my kids that are going to pay the price of this change. So, you know, it's easy to say, well, how is it not happening? You just look at all these disasters, all these conversations on the front page. It should be happening instantly. Reality is this is a fear factor that's got to get addressed.
Mm-hmm.
So when you take a look at today and you combine that, the things that are helping us, the consumer. Consumers are becoming more aware, which is a great thing, because they're having the conversation with the builder, and it's giving the builder confidence to make the change. It's helping with that fear. We're looking at code changes in so many different jurisdictions today. So that helps the builder make that decision to move forward, because now they have to move forward, and the consumer has to move forward. So you're releasing some of my fear factor all the time. But the real question is going to be the knowledge, the capability, and how do I manage that fear? Because I really do, deep down, when I talk to all these builders across North America, they all want to build a phenomenal product,
mm-hmm.
and they really do want to build the right product.
That is absolute gold, what you're talking about. And we use the crusty contractor. I'm crusty contractor sometimes. I'm crusty sales rep. I'm crusty owner, because we're scared of change. And that it's, but how do you come over fear? Is through education. And that's why I first turned the mic on. When I started the Art of Construction Company, was all about that. Is like, how do I learn and teach and overcome that fear? Is about communication and learning. So tell us what you guys are doing to educate the industry when it comes to ICFs in your company.
We have to work at multiple different levels. And so one level is distribution. So if we can't get the product into your hands, well, you're not going to use it. So we got to help our distributors. We got to work with our distributors. And they're also they're busy today. You know, the economy is doing well. People are busy. People are making money. And even though you might think that's a great atmosphere to make changes in, the truth of the matter is that kind of environment is everyone is so busy, no one has time to even talk about change. So we've got to work with our distributors, and we've got to make sure we can get product. We've got to find the right ones. And so that's part of what we have to do to help out. The other thing we have to do in terms of helping, going back to that fear factor, we've got to help create some market demand. So if you look at some of the investments we've made as a company, and I think you'll find all my competitors, our whole industry, have done a lot of the same things. We're trying to create market demand. So you're going to see us as a company and companies like us that are going to be doing marketing campaigns. We are going to be doing ICF training. We're going to go to distributors and say, you know, bring your contractors in. We'll provide training. We'll give you that classroom training. We'll give you field support training. We will do campaigns. We would like to get the product in the hands. So we will try to find whatever we can to assist in getting that done. So those are all really powerful things we can do at the field level. Higher up, we're really active with the National Ready Mix Associations. We're really active with AIA. So we're doing an awful lot of education at that, what I would consider the influencing sector. So any designer, anyone that's into architectural design, anyone that's really going to touch somebody in terms of helping them make a decision, we're involved in those associations. We're involved in the panels. We're at those trade shows. We're trying to get better, too. You know, one of the struggles we have is, you mentioned earlier, what's the cost difference? And it's such a tough one. So imagine if you're building a hotel. Well, what's the cost difference of a hotel and ICF? So we're spending a lot of time now working with different companies that just work with large construction firms and helping them build analysis, cost analysis, the kind of data they need to go into a finance, go to a bank, go to an institution to get their capital. And we're learning so much on some of the benefits of ICF every single day. And there's so many, not just talking about the performance, just from the cost element, site management, moving forward. So there's all of these things that we're trying to coordinate and do at the same time. At the end of the day, it's people. Mm-hmm. We got to get the best people we can find. We got to get people on the ground. We got to get contractors. If we can attract and retain the best people, that's what we have to do. That's going to win the day for us.
How is this helping innovation with homes?
Well, I think kind of touching on to this too, kind of to tag along, talking about innovation and innovative, probably the best story that kind of ties all of these together is how we get down to people. I spend a lot of time on the ground, you know, down on, you know, at the shows, doing these booths and different things with builder associations. A year ago, we did a contractor event where we go to the builder contractor associations. We put our product out there and we talk to them about the product. And speaking of innovative, I met a contractor named Heather Echevarria. She's a listener to the show. So hi, Heather. And she came up to our booth and wanted to know about it and started looking. And first thing she introduced herself says, you know, I'm with Innovative Custom Homes. And I was like, ding, 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 ding. Bells go off, and like, this is our person. She's right. Innovative. And I said, what do you do that's innovative? You know, tell me. I want to know all this cool stuff you're doing. And she kind of sat there for a minute and said, not much, not really, you know. And she's like, you know, it was a plan. It's the idea, you know, was just to be innovative and do all this new stuff. And she's like, I'm ready to do it. I'm ready to be different now. I want to be that, you know, I want to be the innovative builder now. And so she came in and she signed on with us. I mean, she went all in within days. I had a blueprint in my hands and we were moving forward with an ICF home for her parade home in Boise, Idaho. And we compete, you know, she put in a parade with 40 other contractors out there with other, you know, other homes, all stick frame, and her house sold in 4 hours on the first day for full cash asking, and gave her another half dozen leads that came in from people wanting to see innovation and how this happened. And just that, I mean, I'm seeing success with it because, you know, people follow, right? Crusty contractor, when he sees success among his other contractors, his fellow contractors, he follows. He wants to do that. It's scary to be the first guy. It's scary to be the innovative one, you know, but everyone that even wants to be innovative is willing to follow someone's lead that's doing it. And she led, and I'm excited. Next week I'll be doing that same show again in the same spot, hoping that we pick up a bunch of those builders that see what she did and how she did it was so successfully. And I think that's a lot of how we get this out there and change their mind is right at the ground level, putting this product out and letting them see it. So
that's so great. I don't think you can end it on much better a story than the real world of living it and doing it. And I commend you guys for what you're doing and taking the time to be working, you know, on innovative ways to do that, but taking the time to talk about the ICF level. And as a learning organization, to close this out, if there's one thing you want the system build lifestyle audience to learn from, what is that one thing? If they want to use the best systems with innovation to create their best lifestyle, what is that one thing you'd want the listening audience to hear? So in closing, the court is yours, guys.
I got to say that just do your research, you know. I mean, we've got you guys talk about how another way that we're growing, you know, we're in a social media frenzied world right now. That if you can't get information about what you're interested in and innovative buildings and different things off of Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, all these other things that are out there to get the research that you need. You know, you're not looking really hard, you know, a little site called Google, look it up. And I think by doing your research and looking into modular systems, looking into ICF, looking into all these different options that you have out there, weigh your options, look at what you want and see what is going to best suit you in the way it does it. And know that this is your big investment, man. This is the biggest thing you're going to purchase for most people. Build it right. Do it right. Don't be scared. Don't let a crusty builder push you into a way of doing it that's going to be cheaper. It's not about that. I mean, you're putting your kids in these, you know, homes, and you're going to live in these homes. You're making memories in these homes. Build the best home you can.
Awesome, Trevor. And Pat?
You know, building on a little bit of that, at the end of the day, I think for every consumer that's out there, know what you want out of your home and educate yourself and ask yourself some tough questions. You know, how does this house interface with my family, my day-to-day life? How does this house interface with my neighborhood? How does my home interface with the things that are going around globally in my world today? And then have the courage. You know, today, courage is an easy word to say, but it's a really tough behavior to apply. So have that courage. Educate yourself. Understand your choices. ICF's not for everyone, but ICF could be for you. But you need to understand that. You need to really explore it. And when you land, have the courage.
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming and telling us your story, guys.
You're welcome. Thank
you, Dim. When I first got into this industry, I was told by one of my mentors, there's two things that make a successful project. And he said, it's all about getting a good foundation because everything is built from that. And then the next thing is all of the elements to close the home up and make it in a safe house that you can keep the thing going. Those two things can have the trains fall off the tracks and people pointing the fingers. And as we continue to learn with technology, you know, as Audrey is running her day-to-day life with Modular SureSight, and she can talk about that, and I'm running Mountain View Window and Door, those two things come back all the way full circle as system build, which is the new term for modular housing and system building things, and it's all about getting the best value for your lifestyle. That's what we're all about here. So taking my day-to-day expertise from owning a window and door company called Mountain View Window and Door to starting the Art of Construction, to now within the Art of Construction family, we're having focused podcasts. Audrey, take the floor and end this thing about why we started this thing, what your company is all about, and how we're going to blow it up here on the System Build Lifestyle podcast.
So System Build Lifestyle derived from a conversation about different innovative ways to build and the umbrella of the Art of Construction. And from that, there is a whole different area of things that we don't know about building, and one in particular of how it's changing. And one of the ways that it is changing is from a system development, a different way that we are building. Modular comes from that. That's kind of where my company came in from, Modular SureSight. I do site work, excavation, foundations, and I am basically the first point of where the house hits the ground, and I actually do all the site work from there. So building a great foundation is really the asset to all types of building, and knowing more about system lifestyles and system builds and opportunities to see areas of growth in construction and the art of construction, this definitely has a different feel and education for our consumers to actually know that there are opportunities out there to build.
Awesome. So the Art of Construction tribe that we've built to well over 100,000 listeners, this is the in addition to. So both shows are biweekly releases. So every Thursday now, instead of previously every other Thursday, You're now going to get the full AOC, which is all things the Art of Construction, which is specifically designed for contractors and architects to grow their business. And then the following week, you will have the System Build Lifestyle, which is all about bringing those systems to building your lifestyle. What do you say, Audrey? We're going to have a lot of fun.
I am super excited. I can't wait to have more guests on the show and connect with more people.
Awesome. Thanks, Tribe.